Hi guys, I'm Candace Blake. I go to the Masters University. I'm currently a junior there studying communications. I'm kind of nervous, so bear with me. My journey of how I got to Masters is a lot more full of brokenness and sorrow, sadness, and whatnot. So let's get into that. So my mom was a single parent of four kids. She had a child when she was 18. And she raised him on her own for about 6 years, and then she met my dad, who is even now still a criminal and just committing fraud, and he's still abusing drugs and whatnot. So they met, and they were legitimately partners in crime. My mom got involved in all of that stuff. She started, she was doing drugs before that, but she even more so started doing it with my dad, and then eventually she was pregnant with my brother, Keith, who is 2 years older than me, and then my sister, Kelly, who is 1 year older than me, and then myself. It wasn't ideal for her to have kids with my dad, but that's just what happened. And now I see that it's by God's grace. But yeah, my mom, she kind of did all the drugs under the sun, and she did them when she took care of us. She wasn't a stay-at-home mom, unfortunately, but we went to daycare, and we went to public school all of our life. And my dad was never really in the picture. He was more in and out of prison my whole life. He was in there when I was born. So seeing him in person growing up was scary to me because I was like, I don't know this man, but apparently he's my father. And what I saw at school with the other kids was a dad is there with them and there to lead them and be their father. And I didn't have that. And when I did have him around, it wasn't like a dad. I felt like I had to please him with, like in order for him to love me, I feel like I had to be cool in the ways of that he was. So talking about or you know, cussing or feeling that I had to steal things or talk about how I was taking advantage of my friends for money and stuff like that. And my dad, it was like he was proud of me for those things and he'd smile and laugh. And I thought that that joy from my dad, although it was evil, I thought that that was love from him. So that's my idea of love from my dad. And my mom was never also really there because she had to work and support us. But at the same time, she used welfare. We were on food stamps. If some of you guys don't know what that is, it's a government issued card and it basically gives you money every month to provide meals for your family. And so that's how we got fed. And my mom would often sometimes even sell those for drugs. So we didn't have food in the house. So I would run to friends' houses and eat whatever that was there. They started telling me that their grocery bill would be higher since I was staying there a lot. But anyway, that's beside the point. So my mom eventually, as I grew up, I kind of was afraid of her because ever since I was very, very little, she would physically and mentally abuse us, my siblings and I. I mean, she'd get angry over the smallest things. Not even if we did them, she was an addict. So anything that triggered her, she wanted to take out on her kids. So, I mean, I would go to school with bruises all over my body. Sometimes she wouldn't even let us go because she didn't want them to call Child Protective Services and then get her kids taken away because if her kids got taken away, so did her food stamps and her welfare and Section 8 to pay for our housing, our rent, when we lived in apartments. But along with that, our living situation wasn't ideal. As you can tell, we lived off the government, but there are rules and regulations that you have to follow even within that. And my mom obviously wouldn't follow them. You have to pass drug tests. You have to prove where you live. You have to prove how much money you're making. And because my mom wouldn't do that and she'd test positive for drugs, we'd lose funding. We'd get evicted from our house. We have nothing to eat, no car to drive, nowhere to go to school. So I was hopping from home to home. We lived in homeless shelters, domestic violence shelters. We lived in our car often. I remember spending Christmases in our car, taking toys from donated places out of a trash bag, and that was our Christmas. That was kind of just our life. And I wouldn't even call my life like growing up in a broken home because a home was never even promised and it was never something that was physical to us. It was always that we were on the move, we were always running, and we always had somewhere, by the grace of God, we always had somewhere to go, whether it was in our car or sleeping at bus stops in the middle of the night or just staying at hotels or whatever the idea was of a home, that's where it was, and it was at the time. Moved from school to school. I was born in Arizona and eventually made our way over to Los Angeles, California, and we decided to stay in Pasadena where we stayed in a shelter there. And finally, my mom was kind of getting in the groove of things, getting back on her feet, going to all the parental like meetings and trying to become a better parent for us. So she eventually did that and got her income back from the government. And we were able to move out of that home and go into that shelter and go into like an apartment And then the foster system, if any of you guys don't know what that is, it's a government program that basically, there's child rights. So basically, if your parents aren't following that, like abuse, drugs, and not taking care of you or being able to provide for you, the government steps in and takes those kids from the home and places them in like a government certified approved home where they can stay until the parents get back on their feet. They usually give them about like 6 months or so. So my mom, she would kind of fall away and go back into drugs and whatnot, and so we would be taken physically from our mom's care and into a care of any individual that the government approved of and stayed there for about 6 months or so. My mom would do all of the classes and do everything right and visit us, and then she'd get us back, and it was just a constant cycle from then on. We were in and out of the system for since I was three all the way until I was six, or actually 18 years old. Yeah, so that's what I knew of my mom. I knew that my mom was okay half of the year, and she would be able to support us, but that wasn't even ideal because even within that, she'd abuse us and kind of take advantage of her having kids, being able to get the funding that she did. And then, so I kind of resented her for that and grew a lot of bitterness towards her and hated just being around her. So growing up, I would try to go and do anything that didn't mean my mom was there. So I actually tried out for like every sport in high school, didn't make one team, but that's okay. Went to every practice anyway. that was my way of just getting out of the house and making sure that I didn't see my mom and that she didn't have to be there and I wasn't being abused and I didn't have to see weird men coming in and out of the home who were abusing my mom and then, you know, whatnot. So that I was all exposed to at a very, very young age. So it wasn't a surprise to me seeing it in movies, hearing about it. And usually when I tell people my story, they get really afraid. So I hope that I can do the opposite of this for you guys and inspire you and just show you that just the Lord's sovereignty and grace over my story and my life and how he decided to save me and just guard me through all of those hardships growing up. But yeah, as I said before, just in and out of foster systems my whole life and being with my mom and then not and then seeing my dad. It wasn't until I believe I was 12. My sister and I had moved back in with my mother, and there was this youth group going on downstairs. We had no idea if it was Christian, Catholic, whatever. I just knew that I wanted to get out of the house, and it was convenient because my mom wouldn't have to drive us, and sometimes we didn't have a car. So I asked if I can go. She allowed me to go, and I lied about my age, so I can go. You had to be like 13 or something, so I was like kind of close. But anyway, I lied about my age to go, and I just really wanted to be there, and I remember sitting in the message, and it ended up being a Christian youth group by the grace of God, and I was sitting there with my sister, and we were both just trying to, you know, distract ourselves from what was going on inside our apartment upstairs, and I remember hearing the message, and I didn't even know what conviction was, you guys, but I felt convicted. And I was like, oh my gosh, I lied about my age, Jesus, I'm gonna go to hell. Everything under the sun I thought about. And I was like shaking in my chair. And I remember after the service or the message, I went up to the youth leader and he was dating one of the, or the youth pastor and one of the youth leaders he was dating at the time. And I just remember like almost crying, like, I'm so sorry. I'm actually not this age. And just like venting to them what happened. And they were like laughing kind of, which was okay. But I was like, I'm so sorry, but can I come back? Like, what is it? Like, what does this mean? Am I in trouble? And they're like, no, like, you didn't cause any trouble. We're really thankful that you told us now. And obviously you're really close to the age, so we'll let you stay as long as you don't cause any mayhem, which I usually do. But, I was like, all right, okay. And, I was committed to going there every Tuesday night, just to have another way to get out, and eventually started going to their main service on Sunday at the church down the street from our house, and I started getting involved, like the kids ministry and going to all the retreats and the summer camps and whatnot. And it wasn't until about 2 years later where I was again sitting in another message, and the youth pastor had said, how about you guys all split up and go individually and have your quiet times with the Lord and reflect on the time from when you were saved. And I remember just thinking, what? Like, what does that mean? And I went up to him again afterwards and was like, what does that mean? Like, I've been reading my Bible. I've been doing everything right. I thought I was saved. Does this mean like this whole time I would, you know, just all of that, all those worries and concerns. And he took me outside and he said, well, this is what it means to be saved. This is what it means to declare Christ. This is what it means to make him a savior. And he asked me, do you want to do this? And I remember I was like, yes, I thought I did that, but like, let's do it right now. And that's when I committed my life to Christ, and still wasn't an easy road. Still had to go upstairs to that apartment and witness my mom on meth or speed and her still abusing us. And I got a Bible, and I remember I actually kind of stole it from the youth group, but that's another story. But I had a Bible. It was New King James Version. I didn't even really understand it, but I did what I could just to have a relationship with Christ, whatever it meant in the circumstance that I was in currently. And I sat there in my room when my sister wasn't in there because we shared a room, and I would read the Bible, try to get in whatever I could until she opened up the door again, and I'd hide it under the covers. And not that I was ashamed of the gospel, but my family started resenting me for the path that I was going down and would use it against me. That anything I did, they're like, wow, you're so sinful. How can you call yourself a Christian? And even though they didn't live that life, but I was being attacked every day for it. And I remember just thinking and sometimes crying out to God, like, well, if you love me, why am I still in this situation? And just still trying to rest my hope in him and know that he is ultimately God and he does have a plan for me, even in the circumstance that I was in. And I remember moving again. This was the last time I ever moved with my mom, and I was 15, or actually 14. I was going into middle school. I switched towns. I went into a new middle school, and that's where I kind of I saw my mom going downhill again. And we moved into a new apartment. My mom was kind of, she was doing everything she could that she knew was right. She started getting back on her feet. And then eventually, freshman year of high school, I was, again, trying out for every sport, making sure I was out of the house, always at friend's houses, eating dinner. I was even taking showers there because our showers and our water wouldn't turn on. Like, I was always somewhere else but home because home wasn't home to me. And eventually, freshman year, my mom had relapsed and started going downhill again, just doing drugs and using speed and meth and heroin and whatnot. And I just remember it was 3 days after my 16th birthday. Now I was a sophomore, and my mom comes in my room and she opens up the door. And I remember being really mad at her that she woke me up at like 5 a.m. because I didn't have school for another like 3 hours. And she was crying, and she was like, Candace, like, let me use your phone. And I said, I was mad at her. So, of course, I was, like, being a child and a teenager, and I was like, no. And I kept on fighting with her, and then my sister came at my bedside, and she was like, Candace, I promise you, like, I'll get your phone back. Just let me use your phone. And I never wanted my mom to use my phone because that meant I'd get numbers from drug dealers and all types of people just texting me, threatening to kill me and my mom because my mom didn't do something right or didn't come through for them. And so, yeah, I gave her my phone. I trusted my sister, and she eventually handed over my phone to my mom, and I just remember seeing my mom crying, and then I didn't even go to school that day. I was really mad. I still have a habit of doing that now, but anyway, so we, yeah, I gave her my phone, and then I remember waking up, and I walked over in the living room. My mom was asleep, and then my sister had come back in, and she was like, and I was like, what's going on with mom? Like, what happened? Why did she need to use my phone? Where is hers? And she's like, just wait till she wakes up. And then I started getting like fearful, like, what is she talking about? And then my mom was on the news because she had gotten a really bad car accident. She was under the influence. Her license just got suspended, and her car flipped over like 7 times off the 5 freeway on Hollywood Way. And one of the males that she was with ejected from the vehicle and died. So my mom got convicted of manslaughter and went to jail. There then my sister and I were then reunified with the foster care system, and we were split up, so I never shared a room with my sister again. And yeah, we just house hopped from foster home to foster home. Every year I'd come into the registrar's office at my high school and hand in a new slip of a new address and a new name of parental guardians. My last name is Lake, and I was handing in Bertolucci as the last name, and they're like, are you okay? So, yeah, my mom went to jail. My sister and I split up. I just kept on hopping house to house. And my lowest GPA in high school, which is actually pretty hard to get, but I got a 0.0, so I thought, I'm never going to college, not UCLA especially. So, yeah, I was like, I'm never going to college. And one of my teachers was gracious enough to give me a D, so I had a 0.2. Woohoo. But... So I was like, this is it. This is the end. I'm going to end up just like my parents. I'm going to be homeless forever. Not that I'd ever do drugs or anything, but just thinking that I'm never going to have that house and then that home and within it. And I'm like, well, God, like, you know, I love you. You know that I've been like faithful to you and loyal and reading your word and being an advocate for just who you are in me and what you have done in my life. And but high school was just going downhill. And it wasn't until my senior year I moved in with this family, and they were probably the strongest like Christians I've ever had, just lived in a home with. I didn't even know what a proper husband and wife relationship should look like. I know it should be a blessing, but I was like, I really don't know what that looks like due to mine. And then even going to friends' houses and their parents not being saved and divorced and all that stuff. So I didn't know what it looked like. And I definitely thought marriage would be a hindrance. And I was like, I'm never going to get married because that's what it's going to look like. I don't want to be a burden onto them and whatnot. So moved into their home. They had a daughter that was 2 and I was like 18. So it was quite the age difference. But yeah, I went to school and I remember just telling them, like, I don't think I'm going to get into college. What if I have to go to community? Would I even graduate? And I remember them just kind of picking up the whole slack of my entire life. And they like taught me how to study. They taught me how to be diligent in my studies. They taught me what it meant to be a good student for Christ and not just myself and being prideful in that. Because obviously I was very ashamed of like what I've earned. And eventually actually received a 3.8 because of them. And I got accepted to the master's university. So that was exciting. Thank you. not my achievement, but by God's grace, for sure. Got accepted to the master's university. And 2 years before that, I remember sitting in court and my mom was in her orange jumpsuit. And it was just like a bad image for me to see, even though I've seen that almost all of my life. And I remember just praying, like, Lord, don't let me get back with my mom. Don't let them ever reunify us ever again. I'm 16. And that's when the judge hit that thing. I don't know what it's called. I'm not in politics, but or government. But he kind of issued and he terminated my parents' rights forever. And that was just a weight lifted off my shoulder that I will never, ever have to be reunified with drug addicts and have to receive the physical pain and abuse that they put on me my whole entire life. And so I grew a great amount of bitterness and resentment and just anger towards my parents. And I definitely let that stay planted and grow, and just all types of just feelings towards them were all negative, and of course, but I knew that's not where God wanted me. So eventually, freshman year of college, I grew immensely in my faith, and I just knew so much more about theology. I knew what it meant to really be diligent in my prayers, and that God is a generous God, and He wants to give to His children. And eventually, I forgave my parents completely of everything that they've ever done. And I decided that, you know, since they are still alive and there is a commandment to honor your parents, and it doesn't say honor your parents if they're good to you, honor your parents if you have both of them, honor your parents if they're great. It was honor your parents. And so I was like, why? How can I really truly execute this so that I show that I am a woman of God and that I want to honor them no matter the circumstance? So got back in contact with them. I still have a relationship with them today. My mom and dad are both still using, but they're separated, and they appreciate that I'm a Christian. My mom claims to be. I've invited her to Grace Community Church, and she's kind of embarrassing when she comes. But she comes, and she tries her best, but at the same time, she's not living a life for that. So I feel like the roles have been reversed, where I'm confronting my parents and trying to lead them to Christ and be just an ambassador for Christ and show them who He is and to find joy in that and not all of their shame and all of their sorrows, and that if God can forgive them, then so can I. And I, you know, want them to know that they still are my parents and that as long as they live, they still have a soul, and I want that soul to be one with Christ and that they may know Him and just be able to live a righteous life now and not be able to continue in their sin and their sorrow. Let's see what else I have on this note paper. A senior year of high school, I actually got baptized right before going to college. And I remember, again, thinking, like, this has to be a statement that I'm showing myself to the people of the church and the people at my school and where I'm headed to next, that I wanted to make that statement that I commit my life to my Savior. And with that said, I know that we're supposed to, Joey asked me to talk more about, like, being grateful for those who have shared the gospel with us, and just being in that youth group and being there for those many years and that time that I was able to spend in fellowship with those other believers truly planted in me just a desire for the Lord. And I'm really thankful that I was never in a position when I heard the word and the truth that I never neglected it. I never questioned it. I was never like, well, Jesus walked on water. He turned water into wine. I never questioned any of that. I just believed it right away by the grace of God and kind of submitted myself to that and just knew it as true and wanted to follow that truth. So I'm very thankful for that youth group and what it was able to show me and guide me into living a righteous life as a believer. And then with the foster parents that I lived with my senior year, just being able to equip me better in my studies so that I can pursue an education at a private Christian institution, and just be able to have be able to have my faith be evident there. Like even today, waking up, knowing that I was going to be sharing my testimony, I remember all my friends waking up with me and we're all getting ready for church. And I feel like you don't experience that a lot with other colleges and being able to say like, what church are you going to? Do you need a ride? What time? How can I be praying for you? All of that stuff is even still new to me 3 years being there. So it's just an amazing opportunity to be there and study there and have fellowship there. So yeah, I hope that my testimony inspired you guys and showed you guys just how important evangelism is, even to those who are lost or broken or no matter the circumstance that they grow up in, but that, you know, if they still are alive, it still is important to make sure that you show them Christ and the joy that you have in him and that you are being a witness to that. And so that's how I was able to get saved and continue to be in the Word and continue to be with Christ and show that to my parents and my other family members who aren't saved. But yeah, thank you guys for letting me share.